700 millions de Chinois. Emma, Emma, Emma.
Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 138 of the DoubleKnit Podcast.
Hello.
Skating into the holidays.
Yes. We're just staring down Christmas already somehow.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Sorry, we've been kind of busy doing stuff.
Very busy.
Did you have any announcement-y things, or are we jumping right into what we've been doing?
No, not anything.
Not anything.
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. All right, well, I'll jump right in.
Yeah, you go for it.
I was thinking on the way over of the quote from Princess Bride of Inigo saying, you know, let me explain. It is too long. Let me sum up. And so I kind of feel like I'm going to be doing that. Let's see, knit a couple more cowls for the year-long knit-along that I've been doing with my friends. I knit one called Fuerte, which is a lace and cable cowl that I did in some hand-spun yarn that I was really happy with. Although I think there's like one round where you twist the cable a different direction so that it kind of like, it's this multi-strand cable. And I'm pretty sure I did it wrong like a couple of times, but when I'm looking at the cowl, I can't see where I've done it wrong. And I was like looking at the pictures and looking at the cowl. So if I can't see it, I think it's probably going to be okay. Also did Earth Weave, which is a two-color slip stitch pattern done in stockinette, where so you end up with, you're only knitting one color per round, but when you're slipping stitches, you end up with vertical lines as well as horizontal bands of stripes.
I'm nodding my head. As
yes,
she's
Erin is nodding. It is very similar. There's another one from a Pacific Northwest yarn maker, Raveling Rose, that's called Hurricane Ridge, that's a very similar pattern. So it's a very simple technique. I did mine in Ancient Stash, a skein of Madeline Tosh Air, which is their old alpaca blend.
Oh, yeah.
Blend, that I got second at the stash sale at Fort Worden. And a skein of Silk Garden, which I'm sure I also got at Fort Worden. It's a really good pattern to show off Noro yarns because, you know, as the contrast color, because you get a fun little color shift in it. And then I also knit Just Slant It, which is a Susan Ashcoff, another slip stitch pattern, but it's a really basic slip stitch pattern, but it's done on the bias. And for that, I used, oh my gosh, I've already forgotten the yarn I used for it.
I can't help you.
I know.
I haven't seen it.
It's like, oh, it was Eco Alpaca and Lamb's Pride Worsted. Oh, nailed it. Okay. Lamb's Pride Worsted. Really old stuff. And then, let's see, and then I was like, Helix Hat, blah, blah, blah. That's boring. I finally finished my Baltic Summer, which is a Martina Beam shawl that is a very tiny, zigzaggy kind of stitch. So it's like knit three stitch increase, knit three stitch decrease. Very similar to zigzag, but also with some similarities to a lot of Martina's patterns where they're like a hitchhiker or a brickless where you're increasing or binding off and then adding stitches as you go. So it creates sort of more of a scarfy kind of shape where it keeps growing on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in one skein of Socks That Rock that I dyed myself at Blue Moon summer before last. That was a really wild skein with tiny short color repeats. Like, it was really fun as I was knitting it. I kept I'd always kind of stop and admire the yarn because the sections of color I dyed were so short that pretty much every stitch as it would appear on the needle would change color. And I had mixed a lot of dye colors for it. So there's just a lot of color shifts as you go through it. Anyway, I was really happy with that. That was a cute one. And then I pulled out my Rock and Rose, which I had started as my, summer vacation travel knitting before I realized that a four color shawl is a terrible travel project because you have to carry four skeins of yarn around.
That's from when you went to New York, right?
That was from when I went to Europe.
Oh, okay.
Baltic Summer got revived when I went to New York.
Oh, right.
They've just both been kicking around a little bit. So I keep working on Rock and Rose on and off, but I still have miles to go on that. Foolproof, which I'm wearing. I decided I have two skeins of an old, this is an old Noro yarn called Mamosu, which is an alpaca silk wool in like a really bulky weight.
It's very fluffy.
Yeah. And it goes from like gray to blue to purple. And I saw a free pattern that Jocelyn Tenney from O Wool had put up. And I thought, oh, I'll knit that. And I started to knit it. And I thought, this is a lot like Foolproof, but I like the actual construction of Foolproof a little bit more. So I pulled that pattern out and knit it again. And I was just as delighted knitting it as the first time, where I just feel like it's a really clever pattern. There's such an elegance to it where you start with one stitch, you end with one stitch, so you don't cast on, you don't bind off, mm-hmm. you don't seam, and it makes it this loop. Really great for self-striping yarns because it's knit on the bias, so it really shows off the direction of the knit. I don't know. It's just a clever pattern. It's really simple to knit, very entertaining, and totally flexible. Like, you can knit it in any gauge that you want. The first one I did was done in, like, fingering weight yarn, and then this took, like, 2 days to knit because I just pulled out really big needles. Actually, I think I even started it. I think the one that I started from Jocelyn, I'd done on a 10.5, and I thought it was a little too dense, so I think I did this on an 11. Mm-hmm. But a really good, like, palette cleansing, like, easy project. Just knock that out. I just knit a pattern that's very simply called the Herringbone Hat. That's a basic worsted weight colorwork hat with a little herringbone pattern on it. And I did that in Stash Cascade 220. And I'm currently knitting Tic Tac Tuck, which is by Katrina Schubert. Yes, Katrina Schubert. And she does a lot of brioche hats. And I knit one of hers maybe like a year ago. That was the first time I'd done two color brioche. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty elaborate pattern. This one is a lot simpler, although I did have to rip it out and start again yesterday because, I think she's sort of assuming you understand something about brioche knitting. And since I had only done one two color brioche pattern some time ago, I didn't know that when she said slip one yarn over, she meant slip one with the yarn in front.
Oh.
And I was being very literal where I was slipping one and doing a yarn over, mm-hmm. and it's not the same. So mine was looking like, oh, mine doesn't look quite like the pictures. So I ripped it back, and this one I'm doing, my main color is just a gray old single skein of ultra alpaca I've had forever.
I was going to say it looks very fluffy.
Yeah, now that I've like ripped it out and re-knit it, my brim is nice and fluffy. and then a bunch of shades of green of Cascade 220. I'm going to shade it a little bit. I'm on like my second one, and I have a third and a fourth color that I'm going to do. But it's just this cute little tuck stitch hat. Now that I understand it and I'm knitting it correctly, it's really easy to knit. Before, when I was knitting it wrong, I was like, this is so difficult. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Knitting patterns the right way. Helpful. Kind of a helpful thing. One other thing I've been doing. So I don't think I've talked about this. Maybe some long time ago. I have been doing, I'm part of a lot of like stash down groups on Ravelry that I kind of dip into periodically. I've talked about like many years ago, like I hate the whole like cold sheep, like no bot, like not that I hate the idea of it, but just I don't know.
I'm trying to say
it doesn't work for me to be like, I'm just not going to buy yarn because I don't want to put those kind of restrictions on myself. And I feel like just knowing me, that wouldn't be a path to success. Mm-hmm. I don't, begrudge anyone, whatever
their kind of
pledges.
Yeah.
They're cold sheep. They're no buy, whatever they're doing. And I do shop. I mean, I think I just said like everything I knit in the last 6 months is just yarn I've pulled from my stash. Because my stash is huge, but one of the groups though has a little like spreadsheet where you track what you've like you're in versus you're out, and I've been tracking it, and I was, you know, I'm doing great. I'm knitting from stash. And then this summer with all the traveling that I did, mm-hmm. I bought so much like souvenir yarn.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, okay. You know, it's getting up there, but I'm still good. I'm good. And then I came home from Fort Worden and I can't even explain what happened. I think I didn't feel like I'd hit the stash sale any harder than usual,
mm-hmm.
but I think what happened was I got a lot of fingering weight yarn this year mm-hmm. because when I entered it into Ravelry,
that hits the heart yardage,
14,500 yards.
Wow.
That I bought in a weekend for like less than $100 too. Thank you, Fort Worden knitters. Yeah, I was like, I like double checked the numbers. I made sure that like there weren't errors in the Excel spreadsheet. I was like, that can't be right. But so now that's put me like deep into the red on the year. So this is all a long way of saying that. Then I pulled out the log cabin blanket that I've been knitting for the last 10 years in super bulky yarn. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, if I can finish this damn thing, that'll be like 3,500 yards. Which isn't enough to put me in the green for the year. But at least it'll make me feel a little better. And now I'm actually playing this game like, should I wait? Like, this year's a wash. Like, I'm not going to win it this year. Should I save it for next year? But I'm already seaming it. I finished all my blocks. I laid them out. I've got them in rows. And now I need to attach the rows. And I'm dreading it already because it's... I haven't calculated it out, but it's probably going to be like an 8-pound blanket or something.
Mm-hmm.
So having to wrestle with... A 5x6 foot 8-pound blanket to do the seaming is
that's difficult.
Yeah, and I'm crocheting the seam, and I still haven't figured out what I'm going to do, if I'm going to do anything around the outside of it. And I also know that at some point during the seaming process, I'm going to have to stop and dye more yarn, which is another thing that's kind of like a motivation killer.
Yeah,
because I'll be like so close to the end, and then I'll have to stop and dye like one or two more skeins of yarn to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's super close to done. I only had a couple of squares that I needed to finish up. So I finished those. And again, I got it into strips now. And now I just have to join those strips. But it's kind of a bear. Like, I think what I'm going to have to do is, like, lay it out on my kitchen island and, like, work standing up. Because I was trying to work, like, while watching something on the computer.
Can't hold it on
your
lap.
And it's, like, spread across the table. It's just too big. It's kind of unwieldy. And it's also where my laissez-faire attitude to any kind of planning is kind of biting me in the butt, too. Because I'm using all sorts of different yarns in this thing and some hand spun and some other stuff. And I just knit blocks until they were a foot square. But what I didn't think about is, like, one block, I might have one edge that has, you know, 37 bound off stitches, and one block I have an edge that's, you know, who knows, like 6 garter ridges and 14 bound off stitches and more garter. And mm-hmm. so they're like trying to line them up.
Yeah.
They're not the same. Or one, even if it's 2 cast off edges, one might be 32 stitches and one might be 37 because there were different yarns at different times. I was like, this is a foot. This is good. Who cares? And now I have to sew it all together, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of, it's a little lumpy, but okay. But, and it's going to be like one of those gravity blankets that everyone's talking about. It's going to be like an anxiety blanket because it's going to be so heavy and warm. It's actually, I was getting too warm working on it the other day too because it was in my lap, and it was like 8 pounds of alpaca and wool and God knows what all else is in there. It was so warm, and I was like, this is going to be really great when it's done, but right now, I'm dying, so got to come up with a game plan to finish that, but I think that's pretty much everything.
Right on.
How about you?
what
is this beautiful thing? Is this
Gage
Dye
Works? Yeah, this is Gage Dye Works I bought at Knit City. This is her, you know, concrete and tulips colorway.
So pretty. Self-striping.
Big kind of fat stripes.
Muted rainbow. Beautiful.
It's pewter kind of stripes with a muted rainbow. Look at all that.
Oh, pretty.
Very pretty. Mm-hmm. And I really like this base, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm just knitting plain vanilla socks, which I need to measure this because I'm not sure how long it is. It's my bust knitting. So knitting that. And I also started Wrath Trevor, which is a Jane Richmond pattern from Island, but they're fingerless mitts. They're on the cover, but I'm converting them into mittens, and they're going to be for charity. But I'm using Jill Draper Make Stuff Valkill in one of her bluey-green colors that I've had in stash for a while.
Cool.
Because it's really easy to extend those into mittens. And it's just a deep cuff with a broken rib. And then plain stockinette hands. And what else have you been working on? A pair of socks for Noah for Christmas. He already knows about them. Mm-hmm. So, because I have him try them on. Because I never measure his foot and write it down.
Plain man socks.
I'm knitting Eugene by Rachel Coopy from Coop Knit Socks Volume 2. Which is a rib pattern. So it's kind of long stretches of rib, and then you shift it over every few rows, so it makes kind of checkerboard rib, mm-hmm. and then you bias it on the top of the foot, once you get to the top of the foot.
That's fun.
Like opposite directions for each foot. So, they're mirrored.
Cool.
And I'm using some Socks That Rock in the color Spruced, which is like a greeny with a little bit of blue, like a spruce green, basically, mm-hmm. with a little bit of gray in it. It's really pretty nice to work with. And then the last thing I'm knitting is Vard from Rama, which is Rama Garn. Mm-hmm. It's booklet 257R. So it was originally in Norwegian and translated to English. And that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a colorwork sweater. Blue. So that has been taking up the most of my knitting time because it's a bottom-up sweater in the round that's plain for the sleeves and the body, and then it has a really deep color work yoke, and it uses Rama Fennel, so it's fingering weight 2-ply yarn, which I really like. I love Rama Fennel, because it comes in so many colors, and that's nice to work with, but, the ribbing is on, a 1.5, and the body's on a 2.5, and I went up to, I think, a 3.25 for the color work, because my gauge is different for the for color work. And I'm on the ribbing for the neck right now, so I'm going to finish that probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been a slog. A whole 17-inch long sweater body on size 2.5 millimeter needles. It was really great. I took it on the bus. I took it everywhere.
Knitting, yeah.
And then I got to the yoke, and then I was like, ugh, I have to look at charts. One thing is that the charts are just in vertical rectangular boxes, and at certain points it just has an arrow saying do these decreases here. And then there's a note underneath that says shift the pattern so that it lines up. But the way they have the decreases, it's impossible to make it line up. And I looked at everybody's on Ravelry. Mm-hmm. So it's either for the sample size that works, but not the other sizes. Mm-hmm. I'm not a sample size. So I just made it look as nice as possible.
Yeah.
So if you're, they're really for more intermediate knitters anyway. They remind me of vintage patterns, the way they're written.
Very spare.
Everything's spare and kind of in a grid, and it just gives you a chart. And
assumes you know how to knit a sweater.
Yeah. So, I don't know, intrepid, advanced beginners to intermediate, I think it'd be good for.
That was the funny thing with this pattern. I was reading it and doing what I...
Oh, the hat pattern.
Sorry, I'm pointing at my pattern. And my hat pattern last night when I ripped it out, I'm sitting there at the computer, reading it aloud to myself, thinking what am I not understanding here? And I got to the part where it said easy beginner. And I was yeah, right. And even Wes was chuckling. Because I am a fairly experienced knitter. But even I misunderstood the instructions the way they're written. And I even pulled out Nancy Marchant to look at how she writes the instructions for brioche. And when she wants you to do this stitch, she includes yarn forward in the as part of her. You know how her abbreviations are 8 miles long. There's 17 letters.
Yes.
But two of those letters are YF for yarn forward. And this pattern doesn't say that. It just, I think, assumes that you understand that.
Oh.
And I understood it once I was looking at it going, this is wrong. What's wrong with it? Ah, I should have slipped with the yarn in front.
I find that suspect as far as...
I know, but if I were a newer knitter, I never would have figured that out.
Yeah.
I would have just been like, oh, this came out kind of weird. Or I saw someone on Ravelry who was assuming that hers was coming out weird because she's an English-style knitter instead of continental.
Uh-huh.
It's like, that's not the problem. The problem is that...
Yarn forward is missing.
Yarn forward.
Yeah. That's something where you can add that to Ravelry and get helpful noted. That's nice.
That's true. Yes.
So, yeah. So, this sweater, I would say, is for intermediate. If you haven't done color work before, it might be good because it is, like, traditional only 5 stitches of a color at each time, only 2 colors in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is very traditional in that sense. Mine is in the colors that are on the cover, because I was like, I need that exact sweater. Just light gray.
You never do that.
I know, I never do that. It's really weird.
This year has been your year of, like, actually knitting things in the yarns called for.
Shut up, it's true.
And then knitting things in the color called for? Like, who are you?
I don't know.
It's like, we don't even know you anymore.
I'm discovering myself.
Or you're not.
Like, or I'm
you're
not.
Like, I'm just discovering I like that, and
I'm just
I'm
checked
knit
out. No decisions made except that I want to knit that thing.
Yeah.
But it is pretty, and it is stuff, colors that are already in my, like, wardrobe. So it's light gray, dark gray, a natural, and, like, a mustard yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other color variations, pictures in the pamphlet, as well as a hat. So you could do, like, a swatch hat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a men's version that's basically the same yoke, but it's sized up for men.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're if you're interested in that kind of thing, it's a good booklet. It's a little on the expensive side. I think it was like $12 for 3 patterns, but that's like $4 a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I bought the booklet, and then Tea Cozy was having their anniversary sale, and all the yarn was on sale. And I was like, now's the time to go buy all the yarn. I am going to have leftover, though. I'm going to have 2 extra skeins of the main color and partials of other stuff. So that's been taking up a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm.
I did finish a few things. You mentioned your bulky blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And I knit mucklucks
by
Tin Can Knits for Audrey because she outgrew the pair I made her a few years ago. And so I started like the kids large, and I was like, this looks really small for her foot. And then she tried it on. She's like, this doesn't fit. So she's in the adult sizes. Oh, my God. She's about to turn 10 in a few weeks. So it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This pattern is a pay pattern. I think it's $5. And it goes through, like, small kid through big adult, like most of the Tin Can Knits patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And you knit them in different weights of yarn depending on the size you're knitting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to have a color work motif on the leg, but she didn't want that. She wanted plain. So I used some leftover Cascade Eco wool in the light blue. And then I used the ribbing on the top and the sole are in a different color. So you, like, knit the foot, and then you knit a sole flat, and you sew it on. And then once you pick up for the leg and knit up, and then you do the ribbing in a contrast color.
I'm having deja vu of you describing this to me exactly the same way the last time.
I'm sure you did. But last time, I followed their order of operations, and you knit the sole last and then sew it on, but it's really hard to sew it on when you've already got the whole leg.
Yeah.
So this time, I was like, oh, I remember this from last time. I knit the sole, and I attach it after I knit the foot before picking up the stitches.
Yeah.
It's much, much easier. Just a tip for that.
I was going to say, you should put a note on Ravelry and then people can mark it helpful.
I think I might have. I'll do it again, though.
Yeah.
But I used Cedar House Yarns Irish Yearling DK, which is a tweed in the color Cool, I think. It's like a gray with some blue in it, and it's a tweed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice with the solid color and light blue yarn. And I bought that yarn at Knit City.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I used the entire skein because I knit something else with it. I knit the Astra hat by Amba O'Brien, which is a DK weight hat in a variety of sizes. I think she has 2 separate patterns. One is the hat and the cowl, and the other is the mitts or something. It's split up in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a slip stitch pattern, and you use DK weight yarn, and it's like really fun and really easy. And so I used that. I knit that first, and then I knit the mukluks and used the remainder of that skein, because you hold it, the yarn double. Well, I held the DK weight yarn double for the sole and stuff for the mukluks. So they'd kind of match the heavier yarn. But the Astor hat is totally fun. Super easy. I used like a partial skein I had of Miss Babs Northumbria DK in this color called Princess Peach, which is a tonal peach. And it looked really cool with that blue gray.
Yeah.
I really liked it. And I knit, I knit another thing with yarn from Knit City.
Look at which you. Which is, go, I know, man.
Carpino.
Like, did it even go into stash?
Yeah. Carpino by Carol Feller, which is a pattern from Wool People, I think, which is Brooklyn Tweed. Because it's originally knit in Loft. And this, I got like perfect gauge. I think I knit the gauge swatch last time we recorded. But I knit the sweater, which is amazing. And I wear it all the time. And it's just a top-down raglan. And the front is in like a meshy, easy mesh lace pattern. And the rest of it's in stockinette. It's got three-quarter sleeves and kind of a slash style neck. Like, super simple to knit and really satisfying. I would say, though, that, like, a lot of people have knit that in superwash yarns, but it, because of the mesh on the front, it looks kind of, like, a little saggy, because the superwash just, it doesn't have the structure. It flops. So, I think, like, non-superwash yarns are probably a much better choice if you want the look of the sweater as it is in the pattern. If you like the, like, more relaxed, floppy, and I'm not saying floppy in a bad way, like, that look, then by all means, super wash away, but I'm super pleased with it.
Cool.
Yeah. It's so good. And it is, I used Lichen and Lace Rustic Heather Sport in the color Ginger, and it is a rustic yarn. Like, it has little hairs and stuff, which doesn't bother me. I don't have sensitive skin. And I just wear a tank top underneath it. But, like, if you do have sensitive skin, I probably would not recommend Rustic Heather Sport or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is really nice yarn to knit with. And it had, like, still had, like, lanolin in it. My hands were nice. And then the last thing I finished were Animore number one from the book Selba Voter by Terry Shea, which are colorwork gloves in two colors. And I got really mad because I like drunk knit on one of them, which is colorwork when you've had some. It's like the worst idea ever. And I realized that I had like I tried them on and I was like, there's not enough room for the other fingers.
Oh no.
Cause I had like used too many stitches in the finger that I had knit. So like the thumb was fine, but the other, there was just, it was not going to work. I could have had a four fingered mitten or glove, but yeah.
Speaking of Indigo Montoya, hello.
Yeah. So, I ended up pulling those out, and then they were in timeout for about a week, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna either stay permanently mad at them or I'm gonna get them out and finish them when I finish them. So,
yay.
And they're really pretty. Yes. And they're Dale of Norway baby ull, and it's like, I don't know what this is. This is the green, it's, that,
yeah,
I
like
used.
Lime green. Whoa, what's going on?
Runaway scrap yarn.
Runaway.
This might be fiber optic.
I was gonna say, this doesn't look like baby ull, this one.
No, this is random, is
shinier.
Yeah. This is random partial skein that I lost the ball of, obviously, because I can't remember. But it might be fiber optic from Sock Summit.
Yeah. Limey green.
That's cuteness. It, though, because I've been doing lots of things that are, like, fingering weight and color work and kind of complicated. Except for those muck looks. Those were my palette cleanser.
Yeah.
Because they were so fast once I figured out the right size to knit.
Yeah.
Super fast. So,
enjoyable.
Books? I think we were both reading transcription.
Still reading it. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with me. If you've listened to the podcast for any period of time, you know it's not like that weird for me to be like, oh, I didn't make time to read. I keep correcting myself. Not that I make time. I didn't take the time to read. because the time is there. I just didn't use it that way. But so I'm still crawling through it.
It's a new Kate Atkinson.
Atkinson book. I had pre-ordered it. The minute I heard it was being published, it was delivered to my house September 23rd, and I cracked it open, and I read the first, 30, 40 pages, and
I have 30 pages left, maybe.
I don't know what my deal is. I got the book. Our book club just read Lab Girl. We just had book club on Tuesday, and I read the first 5 pages of that, and just every time I thought, oh, I really need to read the book, there was some part of my brain that was like, but I don't want to. I don't know why. I can't explain that. I am still listening to Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki, which I had started to read in book form it hasn't been out that long, but several years ago, where I'd had it from the library and I made it a decent way into it, was really enjoying it. Then I had to return it to the library and I kept thinking I'd get it again, but then I didn't. So, I decided to get it, as an audiobook, and she reads it. I was just like, I'm starting fresh from the beginning, 'cause I sort of remembered how it went, but I'm really enjoying it. But, I don't know if we've talked about this yet. I'm out of work right now. By choice.
We haven't talked about it.
Because that just happened. Oh, right. Yeah, the last time we recorded was me. I was getting ready to go into work to give notice.
Yes.
I put in notice. My last day at work was on November 3rd. Totally voluntary. Just decided that it was time for me to find something else. And I knew that I wouldn't have the mental capacity and space to do that while still working, especially going into holiday.
Yeah. And congratulations on getting out of there before the holidays.
I felt so bad though. Bye everybody.
I would have been like, I feel bad, but I feel really good about the decision.
Well, I even said to my district manager that I felt bad about it. And then I kind of had to laugh at myself because I was like, who here would factor in how their decision to leave work was going to impact me personally?
Nobody.
And yet I was waiting because I felt bad and I felt mm-hmm. guilty and I felt responsible for everybody else. And I just thought, I need to get over that. I am not an indispensable human. Hopefully I will have some news for you the next time we record.
Yay.
About some life changes. But, yeah, so I have, I had been on a bit of a jag this summer with audiobooks where I was doing sewing and listening mm-hmm. to them, because I don't, even when I was going to work every day, my commute was 5 minutes in the car, so I wasn't listening to audiobooks in the car, and I tend not to listen to them at home. If I'm at home and I want entertainment, I usually am just watching a TV show or movie or something on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a really long way of saying I'm working my way through Tale of the Time Being. I am still reading transcription, but that, I think, is it for me.
I can talk about what transcription is about.
Yeah, go for it.
Transcription is about a woman. So it takes place in two different time periods, World War II and in the 50s, post-war. So she is in London during World War II, and she's recruited into MI5, is that right?
Yeah.
Doing transcription for bugged conversations of someone that they are paying to. See, he's supposed to be an English-born Gestapo.
He's
Nazi sympathizer.
He's trying to lure Nazi sympathizers into share any information that they're hearing and undermine their operation.
They're recording, the room is bugged, they're recording all of the conversations on wax records, and then she listens to it and she types them up, and then she gets recruited further to do other work. And that's the World War II part, and then it's after the war, and she's working for the BBC, doing children's programming, and starts realizing that people that were from that kind of spy era of her life during World War II are showing back up, and she's trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Knitting is mentioned.
Yes.
Yes. In a wool shop.
Knitting shows up in a lot of Kate Atkinson's books, actually. Because in Life After Life, there's more than once to talk about. And in God and Ruins, too, where Teddy's wife was a mathematician, and she's also a knitter, and she's pointing out to him that knitting is math. And mm-hmm. So I think she must be a knitter, somewhere in her life. Did you see that Margaret Atwood tweet where she was talking about some old television interview she'd done and saying that her sweater was knit by herself? Did a shout out to Ravelry mm-hmm. in the tweet, and I was like, that is amazing. And did you see also that she's announced she's going to do a sequel to Handmaid's Tale?
No.
She just announced that.
Interesting.
Yes. Unrelated to what's going on the TV show.
Just related to knitting, though.
Yes.
So that's what that's about. I'm enjoying it. It took me a while to get into it. I had to get, a good chunk of the first section done before I was, really interested, unlike other Kate Atkinson books that are a little more fast-paced. Mm-hmm. This one's a little slower. I am enjoying it. I'll probably finish it tonight or tomorrow, so. Which is good, because it's actually due today.
Oh, oops.
Those peak picks.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I've seen it. I see it every time I go into the library, and I'm like, I had it sitting at home.
I read The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. This is also, she's also a British author. And it's about a young woman who works as a tarot card reader on a pier in a British seaside town. She's super down on her luck. She's got a moneylender after her because her mom had died. Mm-hmm. She's really young. She's 20 or something. Her mom died suddenly, and she stopped going to school, started reading tarot cards because that's what her mom did. Mm-hmm. And just to, kind of get over the hump, financial hump, she borrowed money at some crazy percentage interest rate. And so this guy is trying to track her down to get the money back. But she receives a letter in the mail from an attorney saying that she, someone passed away and she's possibly inheriting money. But it's these people she doesn't know. So she, looks them up on Facebook and decides is pretty sure that she's not related to them, but mm-hmm. she needs the money. So she's going to go to this funeral and estate and see what she might get. If it's a small inheritance or whatever. And then there's family drama, and the woman who died is her grandmother, supposedly, and a really horrible woman. And then all the skeletons start coming out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of mystery. It was a little bit slow in parts, but overall I liked it. Mm-hmm. And I read The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers, which is sci-fi, not my normal thing. But this is, super character-driven. And basically, it's this spaceship crew, which is very diverse. And they basically create wormholes. They punch holes, and that's, their thing for travel. And so it's all about them going, kind of traveling to this area where a truce has just been made with these people who are very angry and at war all the time. And so they're traveling there, and they have adventures along the way, and then, stuff happens. But it's really just about the characters. Mm-hmm. So it's not very technical sci-fi, which I don't like, where they're just describing, there is some of that because they describe how they punch the holes in space and stuff, but it's more about getting along with new people and species and how that all works. I really liked it. It was good. Mm-hmm. And I think Becky Chambers has written several books, but so several people had recommended this one to me, who were also sci-fi's not my thing, but I think you'd like this, because I liked it, and I don't like sci-fi, so. Yeah. That's, and I'm still reading that Bowie biography, by Wendy something or other.
That you weren't that crazy about.
No, I'm still reading it, though, in between other books, because it's like, you know, it is really just about his sex life, and I'm like, meh, I wanted more stuff about, like, his processes mm-hmm. for creating the albums and stuff like that, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. So, watching, I've been watching a lot. A lot. I watched, I can't remember if it's on Netflix or if it's on Amazon, but it's called Private Life. I want to say someone involved with I Love Dick, the same actress who stars in it, Catherine Hahn, who is in I Love Dick and also in Transparent, and then Paul Giamatti, and they play a married couple in their late 40s who have been struggling with infertility and sort of on their last ditch attempt of IVF and their relationship with their niece. It's a very like small, I mean, literally a very small film. It covers a very short span of time, a very small number of characters, but it's a very well observed story of this particular relationship and this marriage, in a really charming way. They're not that charming people, but, I was charmed by how intimate it is and how specific a relationship it is. I thought that was really interesting. We had had our whole like teen rom-com conversation. Mm-hmm. So I did watch Sierra Burgess as a Loser. Mm-hmm. Had some real issues with it. I really don't enjoy watching things where like the main character is a massive liar and I'm still supposed to be on board. Like, there was just some creepy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was, like, that's the premise.
That's sort of the whole premise of the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, so.
But I think it does, did you get the John Hughes moment?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, they beat you over the head with him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there were cute parts of it, but overall, I mean, I have to say, like, overall, like, I liked To All the Boys I Loved Before mm-hmm. so much more.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's just a little, it's just the main character I can kind of get behind a little bit more. I also kind of feel like they make Sierra this perfect person in all these ways as a way to kind of make the audience, like, forgive her for being fat, I think. You know, it's I always think about, I did a workshop a million years ago that was about some of the first, like, gay-themed plays that were in the theater. And it was called The Perils of the Positive Image. And I always remember that where, like, whenever you have a character who's sort of an other, and you make them, like, they're the smartest person in the room, they're the nicest person, they're and like, so that, you know, as a way to sort of get the audience on board with them so that we don't mind that they're not, in this case, the prettiest girl in the room. And it just made me really hyper aware of it. Like, does she have to be?
You know, but she's also a big, huge liar.
She is, yeah. But
I mean, that's the thing.
I don't know. It was just something about it. It was just like, I don't know. Anyway. But I mean, it was
cute. I'm not saying it's great. It's better than I thought it was going to be. And I liked some of the stuff they touched on.
Yeah.
So.
And then I watched seasons 2 and 3 of Man in the High Castle. I had never finished season 2, and then right when I finished it, season 3 came out, which is a really interesting series. So it's,
is that one based on the Philip K. Dick novel?
Yes. But the first season ends where the Dick novel ends, and then, stop it. Then the other 2 seasons are just the, you know, the writers just having at it. But so it's an alternative history of that the Japanese and the Nazis won World War II. But that there are these, and now you're in the 60s in this, America that is divided, and part of it is controlled by the Reich and part of it is controlled by Japan. But there is this mysterious man in the high castle who is putting out these films that show different versions of history, which may look very familiar to the viewer, like the Americans winning the Battle of Iwo Jima and atomic bombs being dropped on Japan. So it's still like But they're still sort of slowly working toward whatever it is that they're working toward. They haven't quite gotten there yet, but I do still find it kind of interesting. I watched Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, which is a 4-part series by a chef whose name completely escapes me right now. And each episode features one of these, subjects, let's just say. Anyway, she's really charming. It's a fun series. It's got some interesting stuff food-wise. And anyway, it was a fun... I mean, it's a really quick watch. I watched a show that I didn't think... I hadn't been interested in. My coworkers kept talking about it. Big Mouth.
Oh, the cartoon.
The cartoon. Yeah. Nick Kroll. It is about teenagers going through puberty. It is completely disgusting and foul and hilarious and truthful, even though it's this ridiculous fantasy. Like, one of the conceits of the show is that when you go through puberty, you get assigned a puberty monster who's like the embodiment of all your puberty hormones, and all the girls' puberty monster is voiced by Maya Rudolph, who's always talking about taking a bubble bath. And it's hilarious. I mean, like, disgusting, but super funny.
So it's being a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. I mean, it's like the most realistic, I think, like, depiction of puberty, even though it's like animated and ridiculous, uh-huh. That like it has some really essential truth to it about just like how gross, you know, that moment in life is. And anyway, but and then the kids themselves, though, are like good natured kids. They're not like. But you can still be a good-natured kid and get caught masturbating somewhere you shouldn't, you know? It's like that kind of duality of puberty. But anyway, I think it's hilarious, but it's super gross. Watched Sabrina. Did you watch Sabrina?
I did. Again?
Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Yeah, so I did, so...
You read some of the books, though, right?
Yeah, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina's series of graphic novels. I read the first one, and I really liked it. They're kind of companions to Archie and the Afterlife ones, which I have not read, but want to. Just Sabrina speaks to me more. I liked a lot of things about it. I liked, one, they treat being a witch, and I guess it would be Satanism, as a religion, which it is, mm-hmm. but with the same kind of rules and rituals and all that stuff as other religions. And I really like that aspect instead of just saying, oh, it's all bad. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's a traditional Christian view of right. it. But, like, two people who are, say they're Satanists, like, it's their religion. So I like that it was treated the same way.
Yeah.
I love the styling.
Yeah, it's got a good look to it. It's got a good cast. I was mm-hmm. really, I mean, I really, it's, her aunts are, played by Miranda Otto, and, I always forget what her name is, but the actress who was Dawn in the UK version of The Office, mm-hmm. and she's also the secretary in Wonder Woman. But, yeah, I think it was really fun. I mean, it's very soapy. It's not, like, trying to be any, like, big shakes.
Yeah.
But the whole thing I was, the whole time I was watching it, I was thinking about how, like, like, you know, there are parents, like, conservative religious parents who wouldn't let their kids read Harry Potter because mm-hmm. they thought, like, it was,
They should have watched Sabrina.
I'm like, they would poop themselves.
Yeah,
like,
I was thinking about that,
and I was
too.
Wondering, like, where are all the protests about this? Because
there weren't
they
any.
Are explicit. Yeah. Like, it's not like we're kind of, oh, witchcraft, ooh. I'm like, the whole premise, like, spelled out in the very first episode is that she needs to have her dark baptism and pledge an oath in blood to Satan. Like,
yes.
It is very clear. It's not like, ooh, witchcraft. It's like,
it's
no.
Not like it's crystals and woo.
No, and it's not like witchcraft is just this.
The pagan aspect of it.
Yeah, or like in Harry Potter where, like, wizardry and witchcraft are maybe, like, skills that you acquire or sort of this thing that's just sort of in the atmosphere. Like,
yeah.
This is a quid pro quo. Like, you pledge your soul to Satan and
yeah.
he gives you the dark powers.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, where are people, why are people like
yeah.
boycotting Netflix and like freaking out about this?
But the Temple of Satan, this thing.
Yeah, they are suing because
yeah,
they took they used
the
sculpture
statue.
Yeah.
which I thought was hilarious. But the one in the show is much more well done than the one I saw in the article. But that's a whole thing. Yeah, but I really enjoy it. So
yeah. And I'm curious where it's going to go in the second season since I haven't read any of the graphic novels. I watched The Love Me When I'm Dead, which is a very stylized documentary about Orson Welles and the last film he was making for the last several years of his life.
I have that in my list to watch.
And I thought the documentary was incredibly interesting. I thought they made a lot of interesting choices in how they put it together. So I was, you know, I really liked the documentary. And then, though I didn't realize that Netflix also is airing, I've already forgotten what it's called.
The movie. The personal movie.
The Wind.
Yeah.
So, and I tried to watch it where they've like attempted to finish it or that, and they didn't. All right. Try to formulate your thought, Jessica. It didn't say in the beginning of the feature, who was attempting to finish it, but it seems pretty clear that Peter Bogdanovich had a big role in it. And from watching the documentary, you already know that he had this very tumultuous relationship with Welles where Welles, anyway. And so you have him in the documentary saying, like he was estranged from Welles for years after they had been very close. And like Welles had lived at his house for a couple of years. Saying, Orson called me and told me, like, if anything happens to me, you've got to finish the film. And I'm just like, really? Because everything else this documentary has shown me is that Orson Welles didn't trust anybody to do anything right. And that he wanted to do everything himself. And that he was an absolute perfectionist and a massive control freak. And I'm not going to say Peter Bogdanovich is a liar, but I didn't really buy it based on what I had just seen.
Yeah.
So I found, I didn't want to watch it. I started to watch it and Bogdanovich comes in and he's doing the voiceover and I'm just like, ugh, like I just felt like immediately repelled by it. So I jumped back out and didn't watch it. And instead I watched, very briefly, I watched Insecure, HBO series, Issa Rae. I love her. It's great. And then another cartoon that is a totally foul cartoon, Rick and Morty, everyone always talks about, and I watched the first episode, and I'm like, I don't think this is for me. This is just, like, gross and nasty, and I don't get it, and I don't think this is funny. And then, by the third episode, I'm laughing my butt off. I loved it.
It's like Ren and Stimpy from more millennial-age millennials.
It just, it goes so much further, and yeah, it took me a minute though, especially the first episode, I'm like, this is just gross and awful. Like, I really didn't like it. But then by the third episode, I was laughing so hard. Like, Wes and my son were coming from every corner of the house and they were watching episodes with me and we're making jokes about it. It's really funny. And it's one of those ones where it just keeps building because everything that's happening is a callback to another episode. That's another thing I love about Big Mouth is Big Mouth, since it was created as a streaming series, has all these built-in jokes about the fact that it's a streaming series and they break the fourth wall and they always point out that was a callback to that other thing. But then that reminded me that I wasn't up to date on Bob's Burgers and I thought I had missed maybe a handful of episodes of Bob's Burgers, but apparently I missed a handful of seasons of Bob's Burgers. So I'm still getting caught up. I'm still not up to date.
Yeah,
and I've been watching it for days. Because they have a lot of episodes per season.
Yeah, they do.
But I love Bob's Burgers. I also watched Bodyguard, the Netflix limited series about someone who's the bodyguard to the Home Secretary. But I can't really say that I liked it that much, but I watched it all the way to the end. It's kind of a thriller spy something. But when it was all over, I was like, yeah, that was the thing. Okay. I didn't really love it. It didn't make sense. I didn't feel like it held together that well. So, I mean, the guy who's in it, I forget what his name is, but I guess he's in Game of Thrones. So
I don't know.
He's like a well-known Scottish hottie. but that was definitely not enough to like make me think like that was really worth watching, because the plot didn't hold together very well for me, and the motivations didn't hold together very well for me, and I was like, really?
Did you watch the new Bake Off?
Oh, I had already watched it, because I stream it illegally online, so.
I know, I'm really bad. Oh. Well, yeah. I watched the new Bake Off.
It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I love Noel as a judge, as a host, rather. Yeah.
He wears crazy-ass shirts, and I really like it.
And and Wes is like, is he wearing eyeliner? I'm like, get over it, honey. He's a goth. It's okay. but I love... Well, one, he's just really funny. He's got a lot of really good, mm-hmm. like, unscripted things that just are funny. But what I like a lot is that he's really good at establishing rapport with the contestants.
Yeah, he is.
And I feel like they are much more relaxed around him and more mm-hmm. themselves. So I feel like I get to know them more watching them interact with him. He's just really good at putting them at ease.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think he's been a great addition to the show. I know everybody was like wringing their hands like, how are we going to have the Bake Off without Sue and Mel? But I think he does a great job.
I think
job.
He does a good job too. Yeah. And I like Prue as a judge mm-hmm. too. So,
yeah.
So watch that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Haunting of Hill House.
Oh.
So I was pretty excited about it because I love Shirley Jackson and it was not up to expectations.
Oh no, I kept hearing everyone say how good it was.
Yeah, I don't think those people like Shirley Jackson.
Mm. Okay, fair.
It is one of, I'll preface this, it is one of my favorite books. Mm. I love that book, and it is not, the changes they made were not okay with me. I thought that it would be like an updated version of the book, or like the story of the book, but years later, and it wasn't any of those things, which is fine. I just wish they wouldn't have said that it was, like, based on or influenced by The Haunting of Hill House, because I would have probably enjoyed it a lot more.
And it just had a different title altogether.
Yeah. So, one thing, the only thing that's similar is that there's a haunted house that makes people do weird shit. Pardon my language. and that some of the characters were named the same.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
Because all my coworkers were watching and they're all talking about how great it was.
There's like a drug addict. One of the brothers is like an addict. And I didn't like that storyline. Mm-hmm. The main character in the book ends up being dead the entire series, and I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Some of the visuals were interesting, and some of the ways they played with, like, the architecture of the house was really interesting, but I didn't really care about any of the people at all. And the whole premise, like, the premise in the show was that this guy and his wife were restoring a house, and they lived there with their kids, and then crazy stuff happened, right? And then they all, like, left the house, and it just sat there until they went back as adults, and more crazy stuff happened. But in the book, it's, like, people go there for, like, a sleep study kind of thing.
Oh, right.
It's, like, an unethical... The guy who's leading it is, like, unethically getting people there to study the effects of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And he like plants seeds in their heads of stories, and then weird stuff happens and you don't know if it's real or not. So I feel like that kind of, I don't know what's happening aspect. Is this real? Is it not real? It was just like straight up haunting.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, for me, it wasn't great. I understand why people would like it. I'm also like, there's lots of bad horror out there, and I enjoy bad horror when, like, it's agreed upon that it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I feel like it had, like, high production quality, and it was pretty slick looking, but, like, the actual stories and stuff I didn't find were that interesting.
Okay.
So, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I won't be watching it, that's okay.
I didn't think so.
Anything that has haunting in the title, and it's like, and I'm out.
I think all of A24 Studio, who did... They're all on Netflix, or a bunch of them are on Netflix now.
I just heard that. Lady Bird and...
Green Room is on there, which is one about punk rockers and Nazis, which is really good but sad. Has Anton, the kid who got crushed by the car.
Right, we talked about the Oh, no.
What's his name? Isn't it Anton something?
Yes. No. Is it? He's in Star Trek, too.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. Yeah.
He's Chekhov in Star Trek.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So, that's... they also did The Witch, and they did Lady Bird, and they did a bunch of other stuff.
Too, I think.
Yeah, so, I watched two of their... And they do, like, indie movies as their thing. So I watched Ex Machina.
Oh, God, I've still never seen that one.
Which is about a guy who wins a trip. He's, like, a coder. He wins a trip to the owner of the company's, like super fancy rural estate for a week. And it ends up when he gets there that he's actually supposed to be testing an AI, mm-hmm. which is, of course, a beautiful woman. And he's supposed to be, like, answering...
It's Alicia Vikander, right? And
I don't remember anybody's name.
Yeah.
It was well done. What I didn't like, it's like, why are AIs always women? Why do male... Because it's, like, this rich, crazy dude who has all this money and is, like,
doing AI. If men get to build people, they are going to build beautiful women.
So that... Yeah. And it ended up being more gross than him just building, like, one AI. So that was icky. And it was supposed to be icky, so goal achieved, I guess. And then there's, like, a love story aspect. It just wasn't, like, really my thing. Like, I watched all of it, and I was like, that was well done, and it made me feel really gross.
Oh, I forgot. I saw something in the theater, too. I forgot. Went to see Wreck-It Ralph on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Super
Is
cute.
Is that, like, the third one?
It's the second one.
Second one.
It's really cute. It's a lot of fun. Don't take small children to it because they won't understand any of the jokes and some of it might be a little scary. But it was really funny and really cute. And basically, like, I think more of the jokes were aimed at the grown-ups in the audience than at the kids. Because it's, like, unless the kids really understand a lot about how the internet works. but really cute. Enjoyed it. Sorry.
the other one I watched is Equals with Kristen Stewart and... Nicholas Holt. Yes, there we go. I was like, what is it? and that takes place in the future, and basically, like, the ability to emote has been genetically suppressed in people. So there was some kind of, like, global thing that happened. They don't really say what. Nicholas Holt and Kristen Stewart work together. Everybody wears white. And they, all slick and futuristic. I guess a bunch of it was filmed in Singapore and someplace else. Because I looked it up and I was like, where are these buildings? Because these are really crazy. but they work together and Nicholas Holt starts feeling things.
Dun, dun, dun.
And people kill themselves routinely because they start feeling things and it's not accepted in their society. And it's called, they call it, I'm not sure if it's a virus or just an illness called SOS, which stands for something. Mm. And then there's, like, treatment, which reminded me of the,
conversion
therapy. It kind of reminded me of conversion. Thank you. Conversion therapy processes where they, like, get removed from society and then they're supposed to be. They're given these drugs to dull their, not necessarily that happens in conversion therapy, but given drugs to, like, subdue their emotions, and then they're supposed to, like, take all these steps to, like, redirect what they're feeling. Mm. But they start forming a relationship, and they have to hide it and pretend that they're normal. And there's other stuff around the illness and other people who are... I can't even remember. That's like a few weeks ago I watched this. So, like, people who suppress their own emotions but can still function. They have, like, a special name. So it's, like, it was very interesting. I liked it. I don't think it's for everybody. Mm. But as far as, like, sci-fi kind of movies go, it was a romance, but it wasn't too romancey. It was more like how do...
a romance between two people who are trying not to have emotions.
trying not to have emotions and have to, like, sneak around. And then, like, how they're functioning in their society. And it ends on a positive note.
What?
So there you go. I liked it.
Cool.
And I really like Nicholas Holt. Kristen Stewart, she's like, meh. I think it depends on the roles that she's in. But I really like him.
Yeah.
So, the last thing I'm watching, because I want to end this on a high note, is 911. Which is, like, the best garbage show. It's got Angela Bassett and Connie Britton and what's the guy from 6 Feet Under?
Peter Krause?
Yeah, I think that's it. They're, like, the main kind of three people, and then there's a bunch of satellite. So basically, it's so bad.
So bad.
I can't stop watching it.
I only watched one episode, and I could definitely stop watching it. It was bad.
I got a bunch of messages when I posted on Instagram where people agreed with me that it's such a garbage show that they can't stop watching. Basically, it's a bunch of, like, first responder people. So there's, like, a 911 dispatcher, a police officer, and a fire chief. And so they go on, like, emergency calls, but it's also about their relationships, which I could kind of care less about their interpersonal relationships. Yeah. But the 911 calls are really funny. Like, there's one where a bouncy house gets, like, blown away by the Santa Anas with people inside. And then it gets caught on the cliff.
Oh,
there's one, of course, where, like, the calls are coming from inside the house. So it's, like, all these kind of weird 911 calls that they go on.
I think
I found it.
The one interesting aspect of it was, for me, just only watching the pilot, is that Connie Britton is the 911 operator.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she's on the phone. She's like, I don't even remember which emergency it was. She's like talking someone through. And then once responders get to the scene, she gets cut off.
Yeah.
And then she goes straight to the next call. And like, she never knows what happened to those people that she, you know, spent that time with. And I thought, oh, that's kind of an interesting thought, but like, it's not that interesting. Like, not that interesting as a plot point.
I guess she leaves at the end of season one anyway. So Connie Britton's only in it for the first season. But, highly enjoying that trash show.
Actually, I watched something with Connie Britton in it, too. I think on Netflix, a movie called The Land of Steady Habits, about a recently divorced guy who's, like, some big shot in finance who, like, quit working and is basically just, like, a full-time asshole now. Like, it's just this movie about, like, people who are not nice or interesting, you know, feeling sad about their lives. And I'm like, you feel sad about your life because you're not nice or interesting. I really hated it. And Connie Britton is in it as someone who's also not that interesting or not that she's not nice, definitely not that interesting. I felt like it ended and I'm like, did I just misunderstand this whole movie? Like, I watched this whole thing and I don't get it. Like, why was I supposed to care anything about these people? They were all...
Well, 911 is really good when you're knitting something complicated, because you don't have to really pay attention until you hear, like, the dispatcher call thing, and they play the transcript, and then they, like, cut to the... So I was doing all the color work for my sweater while I was watching it. It's good for that. So,
yeah.
Recommend trash TV. Angela Bassett's really good, though, and I just really like her. So that's
all right.
It.
So you can find show notes at doublenet.net and on our Ravelry group, Doublenet Podcast Fans. And until next time, which we always say we hope will be sooner. Maybe we'll be sooner. We'll see you soon then.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
C'est 100 millions de Chinois. Et moi. Avec ma vie, mon petit schéma. Mon mal de tête, mon poids au foie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 80 millions d'Indonésiens. Et moi. Avec ma voiture et mon chien. Son canigou quand il aboie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 300 ou 400 millions de noirs. Et moi. Qui baise au brunissoir. Au sauna pour perdre du poids. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. soviétique, et moi, et moi, et moi. Avec mes manies sémétiques, dans mon petit lit, en plume d'oie, j'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 50 millions de gens imparfaits, et moi, et moi, et moi. Qui regarde Catherine Langer à la télévision chez moi, j'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 900 millions de crèvent la faim, et moi, et moi, et moi. Avec mon régime végétarien et tout le whisky que je m'envoie, j'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 500 millions de Sud-Américains, et moi, et moi, et moi. Je suis tout nu dans mon bain avec une fille qui me nettoie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 50 millions de Vietnamiens, et moi, et moi, et moi. Le dimanche à la chasse au lapin, avec mon fusil, je suis le roi. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 500 milliards de petits martiens, et moi, et moi, et moi. Comme un con de parisien, j'attends mon chèque de fin de mois. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie.